You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To learn more, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Derek Duman, OBCA President and Boys Basketball Coach at West Albany High School. Today, I'm joined by Donnie Law, Boys Basketball Coach at Milwaukee High School. Coach, how are you doing today?
Doing great.
Great. Thank you, Coach, for taking the time to speak with us. I should note, Coach Law, also the newly elected Vice President of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. So thank you, Coach, for all you do for our association. I want to jump in and give you a chance to tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got involved in coaching, what your kind of coaching journey looks like, and how you ended up as the boys basketball coach at Milwaukee High School.
Okay. So, I have a lot of history at Milwaukee. I grew up as a kid in Milwaukee. My father was a coach here at Milwaukee. He was also a coach at Rex Putnam in football and basketball. And so I had kind of that, the locker room kid. You know, I grew up, I would get out after school, I would go down to the football field and build stuff with all the little football pads and things and always be around the game. And it was very similar for basketball as a little kid, is that my dad would cart me around because he was also an official that could officiate the high school and small college. So if I wasn't on a football field as a little kid, he was dragging me somewhere else in basketball. As I got a little older, I got into high school. I played for my father and at Rex Putnam High School. And it was just kind of a neat experience for me. I mean, it was kind of difficult for him having a coach's kid with him, but you learn a lot. You learn a lot as a coach's kid. You get to be around different other coaches. It's a great experience. And I also was very fortunate as I was going to high school, to be very close with Randy Betsky, who was the basketball coach at the time. After high school, I went on to Western Oregon and played a year. And I came back home after that, and I coached with Randy Betsky and my father at Putnam for a year. And I decided to go back and play high school or college ball again. And I played at Concordia University with Brad Barbrick. And that was a great 2 years. Upon graduation, I went to David Douglas and got my first job from John Harrington as a teacher. It was awesome. It was a great 2 years. The first year I coached girls basketball at David Douglas High School, learned a lot. And in the second year, I decided to try and, splash into college women's coaching. And I coached with Paula Nerschel at the time at Concordia. Upon leaving Concordia, I got a job to teach at Milwaukee High School, where I just got in here and I got my feet wet. So I started out as a freshman coach here. The coach resigned mid-season 2 years in, so I took it over in 2001 in the middle of the season. I think I gave Doherty his first, the most wins ever. I think it was my game that he coached against. And I'm like, we're going to play against the guy that, is going to be the winningest coach in Oregon history. And then we end up losing by 15. But at the end of the year, they hired a friend of mine. And then I just kind of worked through the system as a JV coach for about 15 years. And then in the last 6 years, I've been the head coach again at Milwaukee High School. I also, for about 6 years, worked with a great program called FAST. I wanted to kind of dip in the AAU stuff, so I worked with Terry Pritchard and Melissa Pritchard, and it was one of the most humbling experience of my life. I really enjoyed it. And now I'm here.
Now you're here. Very cool. Yeah, I want to talk to you about playing for your dad. I think it's or your parents in general. We've talked to coaches about that in the past, and it is a really cool experience, but can also be a very difficult experience at times. What was that experience like, and how has that experience maybe informed what you do as a head coach?
I really enjoyed the experience playing for my father. He never once really was the head coach of me, so it was a little bit different, but he was always there with me. So I just enjoyed that time, because when you're growing up as a kid, your father, if he's a coach, is gone a lot. And so that gave me a chance to spend more time with him. And then now as he is older and I'm coaching my kid, he now tells me stories he didn't tell me back in high school of whether he was coaching or whether he was officiating, but he was throwing out some old stories about when he was officiating against Barry Adams and Robertson and all those great lifetime experiences. For me and my, in my situation, it's just, I mean, it's humbling. You get some opportunities that people just getting into coaching don't have. So I'm really thankful for that opportunity.
Any good stories, Coach, that you could share on the podcast? I mean, if they're not appropriate, it's okay. I just figured, I mean, man, if you got them locked up, I mean, I think we'd like to hear some, at least one. At least one.
I just remember when I was a kid, I was my dad's ball boy at Putnam, and I went to take the ball out, and I threw it to the official. And then the official one time, he didn't like how I threw it, so he yelled at me. So then the sideline official, he walked over to the sideline official, and I don't know what my dad said, but evidently at the second half, that guy changed sides. But, I mean, and it, you know, and it is other things. Like, I remember when I was playing quarterback for him at Rex Putnam, and he, you know, I came off the sideline, and I didn't do something right, and I knew where to go. If I did something right, it didn't really matter, but if I, you know, I made the wrong read on a pass, I just made sure I saw him, and I'd beeline it the other way. But, you know, there's a lot of positives. He was my assistant for a year when I was coaching JV at Milwaukee, and it was great. I mean, it's just having him around, you know, and there's more positives than negatives, so it was great.
For sure. You mentioned a little bit, too, you get an opportunity now to coach your son at the high school level. What has that experience been like? And what advice maybe would you have to other coaches that get the chance to do the same?
You know, the one thing I'm fun because I've been coaching for a long time, so I get to talk to other coaches, especially when we have hoop tours here on the weekends. That we can, a lot of the coaches come and watch their teams play, and I get to sit down and I get to ask them questions because a lot of them have coached their kids growing up. So I'm constantly learning, and I'm constantly asking questions. And there's different kind of ways to go through it. It's been fun. You know, I coached my kid for fast growing up as a kid. I didn't coach him when he was playing with our youth, but I don't coach him. Well, I did coach him across country one year when our coach resigned, but I wasn't really a coach. I was more like but it's been a great experience. But I have learned that you have to kind of step back a little bit every once in a while with him because he is a three sport athlete. And at the same point in time, I have what I want to have done in basketball, but he also has, and it's taught me how to respect other athletes that may not have basketball as their most favorite sport, but they participate because it's an opportunity to compete. So, I mean, it's been fun. I mean, he works his butt off and he's always at everything. And as a coach, you're kind of blessed to have that.
Absolutely. Has he beelined it away from you yet, Coach, when he messes up and comes over the sideline? Did he pull the same thing you did with your dad? Or
my assistant coach, all my assistant coaches went to high school with me, or except for one of them didn't. But and they all remember when I was coaching and they were little kids. I always had the kids in my baby Bjorn or running around the gym during games or accidentally throwing a ball on the floor during the game. But so he knows all of them, and any time that he sees that my face is red, he just goes straight to them.
Yes. That's a good system, too. I like that. Coaches, we get ready for our upcoming basketball season. You know, things are, you know, hopefully returning a little more back to, quote-unquote, normal. But as coaches, we're going to have to kind of reestablish kind of some of our expectations and kind of reset our culture. Have you talked to your assistants, and what are you kind of planning to do to prepare and kind of reset for this upcoming season?
Absolutely. So what we're doing at Milwaukee is I'm kind of like starting over again, like what we did 6 years ago when I came in and there was no uniforms and it was but we're reestablishing culture of effort. And that's what I'm going to have on the back of our warm-up tops. Because from the year that we were in COVID and we were outside working out in the rain, snow, sleet, not knowing if we have a season, it's different. We actually are having an established season. I'm excited for it. And we provided those opportunities for our individuals, whether it is in our meetings that we have, like I'm having a meeting next week to get everyone down and go over goals and expectations and just getting back to where there is something to look forward to and not something to be worried about. We started to do workouts with our kids in the weight room. We're doing workouts in the gym. I'm fortunate that my JV2 coach is the teacher at Rouse, our junior high, so he's starting to have open gyms again with kids just to get that interest going in again so we can get that them back to where we used to be. So, you know, and the best thing I did, I would say, is that so when we played in the playoffs against Crook County, we lost. I had BJ's daughter make me a bracelet called Hungry for Home. So last year I wore this bracelet all year round, hoping that we would have a season, hoping that we'd have a playoff, and hoping that we would get a home playoff game. And we had the end of the year culmination thing, but just building that hope building that back to where we normally are.
Yeah, I love it. Has the pandemic changed anything, either in your expectations or standards for players? Are you, more lenient on things or more compassionate maybe with how the pandemic has maybe affected kids? Or are you just going to go right back to where you were a couple of years ago?
So I'm always compassionate with our kids, and I see we're kind of starting back from scratch. And I'm very hopeful that, I got some good guards and our youth is starting to build up again. We're starting, I have a sense that I understand that it's new for them, but at the same point in time, I do have standards that I want them to meet. And so, your grades are, you're doing well in school. You're going to class. If you're not, they know I'll find you and I'll have a conversation with you. If you're not at basketball or you're not, you need to be at your current sport right now, making regularly attendance. If you're not there, hopefully you'll be in the basketball floor. But we're going to, and when the season starts, it's full go. And we're back, I'm treating it back to normal, but I'm also compassionate where I know that they're going to have setbacks and letdowns. And so I'll acknowledge that and I'll provide a scaffolding to help them, I don't want them to fail.
Right.
That's the whole thing. I don't want you to fail, and I'll do whatever I can to help you as long as you put the time in.
Yeah, a lot of teaching moments coming this winter, I'm sure, for all of us.
Yeah.
How do you deal with managing player expectations of playing time and getting them to buy into their role on the team?
That's a great question because, that's one of the biggest things with high school coaching is building an atmosphere in your program that everyone has the opportunity to be successful. So, we sit down, we'll sit down next week and do our individual goals and what they see as a team goal. When we have our tryouts, we'll have our start of the season group goals, which is kind of like a scaffolding where this is where we want to be. These are the steps we need to take to get there. Throughout the year, we have this thing called Goal Buddies. So we partner a kid up with another player on their team, and they have to provide one thing that they do well and one thing that needed to keep them in check, and it's their responsibility. We try to make it a program progression. Each one of our coaches has like a group of four or five kids that they're in charge of just to communicate with. I teach at the high school, so I'm always there. I live here, so we do meals all the time, so we're constantly together so they have the opportunity to communicate because that's one of our big things that you need to be able to talk. And when they talk about playing time and those other things, we watch a lot of film. We do stats all the time. Fortunately, we have huddle. Tom Johnson from Barlow gave me his breakdown, which says it's a field goal efficiency. And we rely on that, like how important you are on the floor right now with the minutes that you give or where you could improve that. So look for these that will help you and get you more time on the floor. Mm-hmm. And then I hope at the end of the year, they all come back. I mean, it's not perfect for everyone. I for seniors, I've never like, my goal was, you play 4 years for me, you have an opportunity. I won't get rid of you. But, it's on them if they can handle that. There was a year we went to the state championship game and one of our best players, not our best player, but one of our best teammates never once played.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the year that we went to Cook County, the favorite player on the team, he was the bench captain. You know, and we made sure to get him in the game when he could. So.
Yeah. I like your goal buddy. So when you come up with a goal buddy, if you and I, let's say, are goal buddies, I'll do an example here. Do I set the thing that I do well and need to improve on, or would you set that for me?
I set that for you.
Okay.
So, I mean, they know each other. They know what they can do. They know what they can't do. And it helps them start to talk to the other team, their individual person. And then we put it up so we all know. I mean, it's a positive. And if there's something that they don't know about that kid, then they might ask them. And that kid will put something the player will let him know, these are one thing I'm doing well and these are one thing I'm not. So there's different ways to approach it. We change it up.
Yeah.
But it allows them to, because you want the kids to be able to communicate with each other.
Right. Well, and hold each other accountable, right? I think that's a big goal to make great teams, is that kids hold each other accountable, not the coaches. That's what takes a good team to a great team. And I think that what you're doing just sets that up naturally within that. So that's cool. How do you deal with swing players? And maybe you don't have them very often, but I've found in my experience, sometimes swing players can be difficult because they practice a lot with the varsity team, but then they get most of their playing time with the JV team. So they kind of feel transient and like they don't have a team that they belong to. How do you kind of deal and work with your swing players to make them feel involved and bought in to playing with two different teams?
You know, that's never perfect. I was a JV coach for 13 years. And so they're kind of like on an island. They're kind of like they're not really with one and the other. So I try to, as my JV coach loves them up, but we do that right now. If you're not in the rotation and you're a junior, I make sure that you have enough opportunities so that way you can be successful by your senior year. You'll play both. But just constant communication. I mean, we had over the years, when I was coaching JV, we'd have some players that wouldn't get the minutes and they'd get a little grumpy. So I would tell Kyle at the time, I'd say, hey, just let him play a quarter or two with me. I'll love him up. And then we'll bring him back up and I'll help you. We'll build up their confidence and it will help their game. And actually, that was one of the things that really was helpful. You know, and some kids didn't want to come down. And, we'd have those conversations with them. But for the most part, it was okay. I mean, it was good. I mean, when we went, we had this one kid that he was grumpy because, he's a junior. We were locked up, and the varsity had a bunch of just talent at his spot. So I said, CJ, come on down, play two quarters with me. He's like, fine. So he comes down, and he'd come down and get 25 points or 20 points in two quarters. And it starts building his confidence, and by the end of the season, when we were playing Bend in the playoffs, I think he hit like 6 threes in the varsity game to put us in the state tournament.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah, I love it. Little good cop, bad cop, baby, right? JV coach love, right?
So, and we do the same thing, because one of the kids that my JV coach was actually one of those swing players this junior year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great guy to have in that position then. It's been there, done that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff, Coach. We're going to take a break. We'll return with more from Coach Law right after this on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, as you prepare for the upcoming season, don't forget to renew your OBCA membership. Membership includes access to exclusive resources from high school coaches across the country, as well as access to Lucio Sports Technology, the same technology used by NBA franchises. Membership starts at just $15. Don't delay. Renew your OBCA membership today.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Derek Duman here with Coach Donnie Law. Coach, I want to talk to you about practice. So if you were to invite me to come watch your practice, what would I see? What would I hear? What would I feel? What kind of, as the kids would say, vibes would be in the gym?
If you were to come out and watch this practice, It's pretty organized. It's up tempo. It's constantly correcting. All coaches involved. Every drill is competitive. I use a drill library. I have just some drills, like I have my transition drills and those different drills to incorporate, to make it high energy the whole time. It's loud. If it's not loud, then we'll make it loud. If the energy is not there at the start of practice, I'll send them out of the gym and I'll make them come back in with high energy. And if it's still not, then I'll send them out of the gym and bring them back in. Sometimes I'll make the lower levels be included in our drills themselves, just to kind of put more people in the room, and it's put more people in the gym, it's more energy. Other ways during practice, I'll have like a team sit out and then have the other team, because a lot of our drills are competitive, like everything's competitive. You got to make a certain amount, or there's, you know, there's rewards for not making it, I guess. So like we might do a spur drill and the varsity might be on the side, because, and we might have to bring the freshman to do that same drill, and we'll get, you know, if you want to play at this level, then you got to hit this note. And then if they do, then we're excited for them. If they don't, we're still excited, but they have to do some consequences. We do a bunch of different things like that. So like, for example, at the start of the year, it's pretty easy. Everyone's energized, but in the middle of the season, when it starts, you know, I mean, you're in week three, or you're before your first game, or you've played a couple games and now you're into it and you're back to trying to get back to normal. We'll change your practice and make like a game setting last, like treat practice as four quarters. Like, if we're not competing in the third quarter, I'll make some things in that part of the practice, get the energy out of them to see at what level you have to play during the game. And I keep all my practices and I refer back to them and whatever I can get. It's fun. We have people come watch your practice. It's a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to press you on the communication part of it, right? I think, yeah, if you asked any coach in America, they would say they'd want their gym to be loud and talkative. But, you know, high school kids, for some reason, when they get on the floor, don't always like to do that, right? So
yeah.
Are there specific things that you do to motivate or encourage or celebrate that communication within your practice?
Oh, we'll stop practice times, and it depends. Not all kids are like that. I mean, not all kids, that's not comfortable, you know, talking and communicating, and not only just saying, like, help side, deny, I got ball, but like just literally talking to the kids, like you talking to your teammates, that's difficult. And so we've, you know, we'll reward a kid when he starts communicating when they haven't done it prior, or it's difficult for him. So we just do different types, you know, like we'll pull the kid out and the kid will take him outside and talk about it and keep doing it. And then sometimes, you know, not, you know, we'll reward with a consequence if they're not communicating. So, you know, and that's one thing, I mean, if you have a guard on your team that is a leader and that can communicate the whole time while they're playing and still competing, you're lucky.
Right.
Without that, if that's not your focus. But if you don't have that, then you got to build it up. I remember when I think it was Dame Lillard, his high school coach, said that he'd have to say 8 words or 10 words before he crossed half court because he wasn't a very vocal person.
I like it. Like a word count for an essay, right? You got a word count practice. I like it. I like that. When you talked about, you know, energy's not where it needs to be, you would send kids out, get them to come back in. Is there a certain amount of times you would do that, or could you do that if, you know, your energy's not great that day? Would you do that like 10 times, or at a certain point would you kick them out of practice? What would that look like?
I've never done that. They usually figure it out by now. And I talk to the kids. I learned this from Coach V. He says, you know, if you have a really good team in your whole season, you'll have 3 poor practices. No energy, sluggish. If you're less than 3, that's what he said. And so then I'll look back in the year, how many did I have of those? So, you know, I mean, and if that's, you got to get it out of them.
Right. Yeah. Do you have like a captain that talks to them when they get kicked out? How long do you kick them out for? Is it like a minute? You get them to figure it out, or is it?
It's like a 10-second thing. You just, everyone, you're out. You guys figure it out. Come back in. And if you guys are cheering and rolling, well, then we'll get going. Oh, we got to go back out. Oh, we're coming back in. Just like the old school kind of fun stuff.
Right.
And it gets the energy going. I mean, it's not like, that's like a rarity that I have to do that.
Right. Well, that's the sign of a good team, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully, hopefully coaches that are listening, you're not having to do that every practice. That's probably not a good thing. If that's the case. It's probably gonna be a tough question, so you know, take your time to think about it, or you can come up with a couple things as well. But what do you think is the best thing or best things that you do as a coach?
I've gotten better at utilizing my assistants. That's one thing. Another thing is, you know, I understand that you're a high school kid, and there's a lot of things going on in your life, and that I'm always there to be listened to. Like a lot of our kids, you know, I think 75% of our students at Milwaukee are on free and reduced lunch. So I'm always there for them. You know, they know, and it doesn't matter how old they are. Like I have 38-year-old kids, you know, they're grown adults now. Come back and still ask questions and communicate with me. So I'm there. I'm fair with them. I love them up. And, you know, and I'll do whatever I can to provide them the opportunities that other schools that have those free opportunities for them don't. And so, like, for example, every year we go on a trip. It didn't happen 2 years ago. We're planning on going to Arizona. So when I fundraise, I do whatever I can to provide them a great experience in our program. I'm there all the time, and that's kind of the one thing. And I connect kids with kids. I mean, it's been fun. Like, I got a couple kids now playing college, and it's been fun just to connect with them and see the difference of what high school is versus college.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. You talked about improving as getting your assistants more involved or delegating. But what are some things that you delegate to your assistants?
I still do. I'm in charge of the fundraising things, but like practice. You know, when we put together practice plans together, I'll send it out, you know, 2 days prior, what we want to do 2 days ahead, and is there anything that they want to have in it. I try to make sure that in all my practices, I'm not the one voice. So I've kind of reverted to, you know, each drill or each has a coach that's specifically in charge of that. So that way kids don't always hear my voice, they hear others. Right now our open gyms and the other things that we do, I make a person in charge each day. So the kids, you know, I mean, I get a feel, with, you know, when the head coach is there, sometimes they work hard, but that's sometimes the kids work better with my varsity assistant. So, little things like that, when we're like for game management, like we have pregame meals. So I'll have a coach in charge of that. The stuff to kind of take it off everyone's plate.
Yeah.
So And I'm still learning, so if any ideas anyone else has, feel free to share with me.
Right? Yeah, no kidding, right? No kidding. As a head coach, we wear a lot of hats, and you know that, and talking about delegating and getting some things off of your plate. One of the toughest is to run an entire program. So not only are you the varsity coach, right, you're in charge of your JV program, you're in charge of your freshman program, and oftentimes all the way down to the youth levels. So how do you manage your time to ensure that not just your varsity team, but your entire program is successful?
Good question. We're starting back at scratch. So this past summer, we had to put together our board again for our youth program. And so our youth program has got a great board. So that was the first thing. And they've started to meet, and I've been at meetings, and they've kind of taken it over, and I've just kind of been like the bipartisan. So that's been a great experience. Like, we're getting our youth back involved that way. So they're in charge of, you know, I'll run the tryouts for them this year, which will be tonight and next week, but they'll do the evaluation process, and they're just getting all that back going. My high school program, unfortunately, like, we went from like three teams, now we have four. So, each coach is in charge of that. Each coach is in charge of, I mean, it's a great experience, the fact that I'm starting to have people in my program that understand our community and understand our kids, not just like for, understand them for years, that I trust what they're doing as long as they're doing the stuff that they're supposed to learn for our basketball program, whether it is our offense, defense, and so forth. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of been kind of fun. And even in the youth, they've been asking for what we've ran. So they're starting to run what we're going to be doing now in our program. And it goes from the top down. And it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun that, like, our kids, this group of kids have all grown up in our youth. So they know the junior high and the junior high coach, that my JV2 coach. They go back and talk to them and talk to the kids at the junior high and then tell them what the experience is. So.
Yeah. Do you self by yourself or the, I guess maybe the board, do you like hire all of your youth coaches? And if so, that can be tricky too, right? Between, you know, parents versus non-parents. How do you manage that?
In a perfect world, wouldn't it be great? But, so we just, you know, and I'm involved, and I know some things are positive, some things are negative. You know, not every experience with the coach is fantastic, but when I start to hear those things, and I watch practices with kids, and I can see, you know, are they providing the proper experience to those kids? And if they're not, I'll have a conversation with them, and we'll have different platforms to work with that. But for the most part, they all care. They all want the kids to be successful. So that's kind of the plus.
For sure. How do you know, and you talked a little bit about this with Coach Johnson's efficiency program, but kind of like your analytics, like how do you know if your team's played well? What statistics do you use to determine how efficiently or how well your teams are performing?
Well, one thing that we do at Milwaukee is we like to run, so we compare transition points. So how many free baskets are we getting? That's one thing. We look at the defensive rebounds, the offensive rebounds from us. Even though my teams have been shorter, they still can compete off the offensive rebounds because we shoot. You know, I've got guards, so they're longer shots. We look at different groups together. Like, you know, if you go to the huddle, you look at the different groups. This group of people works best here, so we try to put them in that situation. We just compare individual stats as well. Like, if, like, I think last year I had a kid, I said, you are helping me out when you get 8 rebounds a game. And so, sure enough, every game he let me know, I got my 8. And now I can take 4 or 5 more shots. The reality is, as long as, I also look at the fact, you know, shooting's fun, but what are the other things? You're more important if you can be able to distribute the ball and get the offense to run and, you know, get free baskets for other people. How can you create for others?
Right. So you talked about, you know, individual kid having 8 rebounds. Do you set certain goals for your, like, your free baskets? Do you have certain goals that you set maybe every game and then debrief after games to see if you met those? Or is it kind of on the fly?
No, we have, we do that every game. We have our team goals of what we want to meet, you know. We want to get this many transition points. We want to make sure we hold them to this many offensive rebounds. We want to make sure that we get – you know, we win the defensive rebounding. Certain years, it depends. I mean, I know it's not the best stat, but it gets the ball to go up and down the floor is how many steals we're getting per game or deflections. But, we look at that. And then we also look at the team stuff and we look at the individual things. Like, if I know that a player that should be having these stats and they're not, we'll have little sit-down conversations with them to find out ways to how they can get more of those. And usually it's sometimes kind of an effort thing.
Right.
But, And then we start to find out that, you know, as coaches, sometimes our 7 rotation is not great. We got to make some changes.
Yeah. Do you have assistants that keep track of those things during games, or do you do all of that afterwards when you're looking at huddle?
So it depends. I use the efficiency field goal every game. And it's not perfect. I have one person doing defense, one person doing offense. Then I have a guy in charge of quarters, which is my assistant coach, and he's also in charge of subbing, you know. But, and we look at that at halftime, and we look at that into the game. And if I'm lucky, I have another coach, depends on the year, they'll have them chat to track their stats.
Mm-hmm.
And we look back at them, and we have conversations at halftime about them and how we can fix those things and come back down in a better situation, or maybe we're doing really well. Let's keep going at that situation.
Right. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's right. and I'm learning. I'm like anyone else. I'm not good at that stuff. I mean, I understand huddle, but like when I went back to Ohio for the National Coaches Convention, they had a guy for like Instat showing us everything, and I was just amazed and blown away that what you can do to track.
Right. Yeah, that game, that part of the game has really improved. Not only just with huddle, but you know all the things now that colleges are statting, and I'm sure like what you saw at the National Convention, things that you didn't even know you could stat. Right.
There. Yeah.
Help offer efficiency. Yeah.
Well, I have, you know, and I do my stats. I'll look at the game and do my stats, and I'll do it sometimes. It depends on the team. But I mean, there's still coaches in our state that don't use huddle, that still go back to the old way that they do the stats. And it's amazing. It's awesome that they're still doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. More power to them. More power to them. last question before our next break, coaches, is kind of on skill development. So you talked about, you know, this year especially, you've got a lot of kids that are multi-sport athletes. So that kind of eats into maybe your fall skill development time or potentially your spring skill development time. So what does your kind of skill development plan look like? Do you implement it in your regular season practice to catch up? How do you operate with your skill development?
Yeah, so normally, you know, we'd have our little workouts with our kids, and we do go through the dribble skill works of what I want to see. I mean, I'm very fortunate that, like, when I was working for FAST, I got to sit – I mean, one of the best trainers in the country is Terry Pritchard, and then he'd put his kid Peyton through it, and Anthony every day. I'd just sit there and watch the drills that they do. So I still have those, and I still will do some of those things with our high schoolers here in Milwaukee. But we have our set, you know, these are the types of dribbles I want to see. These are the types of passes. These are the types of shots I want to see around the rim. These are the types of, you know, threes. I don't want to see any sidestep threes right now in the early on season. And we'll work on those things and we'll rep them. One thing that we're going to do, because I was sitting down with my kid and he's like, we need to make sure we do this right, is we'll have our practice at night, which will be our practice. And the first couple, you know, we're going to have morning practice. We'll have 2 days. And through the days, the morning ones are going to be the skill development. And then the older one. And it'll actually group incorporate it throughout the practice of what I want to see for shots or what off of what actions do I want to see you get that. So if we're doing our dribble drive motion and we get a kick, these are the types of things we want to see once you get the kick and once you kick it out. And we'll rep those throughout the year. But we're big into skill development, and you know, and our kids haven't had been skilled for the last 2 years.
Right.
There hasn't been. I mean, they come in and they got the shots that they saw from TV or YouTube, and it's like there's some real things we got to work on here.
Right. Yeah. Or it was outside in the rain and the snow, and you know, it's a little different inside a gymnasium.
Yeah. When it was, I remember, man, it was raining. We were underneath the cover last year, and every time the ball went in the grass, they'd come back just muddy and wet. 5 minutes in.
It was a strength thing, though. The ball's a little heavier, so maybe their calf muscles got a little more work in, coach. Maybe that was the benefit they got there. All right, we're going to take another break. When we return, Coach Law will try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
The Oregon Basketball Coaches Association is excited to announce the Central Oregon Regional Youth Coaches Clinic. The clinic will be held on Sunday, November 7th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. at Summit High School in Bend, Oregon. If interested, please find our registration page at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We're talking with Donnie Law, boys basketball coach at Milwaukee High School. Coach, for my next set of questions, I'm going to put 35 seconds on a timer and ask you some rapid-fire questions that should have 1 to 2 word answers. And we're going to see how many questions we can get through in that time. Sound good?
Yep.
All righty. 35 seconds on the timer. We are starting now, do you think Oregon high school basketball should have a shot clock?
Absolutely.
Implement it at the sub-varsity level?
No.
If you're up 3 points with less than 10 seconds, do you foul?
Yes.
How big of a lead do you need before you pull off a press?
20.
What's your favorite way to guard on-ball screens?
Fly to the top.
What's your favorite sports movie?
White Man Can't Jump.
What's one word officials would use to describe you?
Intense.
That's it. Time. Good work. Good possession, Coach. Good possession. So shot clock segment, it's fun. I like to ask some of those questions, just get coaches' different opinions. But as you know, Coach, being involved with the OBCA and going to the national conference, the shot clock is a hot topic issue. Even bigger now that NFHS has put it on the state to decide whether or not they want a shot clock. You have said that you're in favor. Can you expand on why you're in favor of a shot clock?
I think this kind of disrupts. It helps the flow of the game. I think naturally it helps. It makes the. I mean, it helps the kids. I mean, in my system, we'll shoot within 25 seconds, but it allows for the game to have a better flow. I remember sitting in the state championship game, and I'm watching two teams, and I watched one team hold the ball. This is in Oregon. We'll hold the ball. They had Mercedes Crabtree. Just hold the ball the whole time. And I just want the memories for the kids when they play in that game to be a positive and not be like this, we're trying to control the game. If that kind of makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. You've gotten to have a lot of experience in a basketball gym from college level to high school to boys to girls, AAU. What's the strangest thing you've seen in a basketball gym?
I could say a lot of things if I couldn't put them on the air, but the funniest thing, and I still have it, is Corvallis and Silverton, I think it was the girl, they were playing in the state tournament. And the mascot for Silverton and the mascot for Corvallis were having a dance-off in the middle of the floor. I still have the video. Within two minutes, they start pushing each other, and they get separated. And it was amazing. It just pops in my brain. So that was just the corny one. But, I mean, as an athlete, just watching Kevin Love, having been fortunate enough to watch Kevin Love play for 4 years, and just watching him progress over the years. There's so many, and a lot of them are funny, and a lot of them are fun, and there's some great experiences watching game wise.
I like it. The dance off. That's probably why OSAA doesn't allow dance offs anymore, unless it's the actual dance competition. I think So, if there's any high school administrators out there, make sure we keep our mascots in check. We don't need a scuffle. We don't need a scuffle at half court. But I like it. What's your process for selecting team captains?
That's a good question, and we're going to have to go back to that this year. And it depends on the year. Sometimes I just took, the team would go up and they would just decide on themselves, kind of like a little war room. And then some years I have this, if you feel like you should be a captain, you need to fit these qualities. It's on a piece of paper. And then they sign off, they meet with me if they think they want to be it, and then we'll vote on it as a team. And that's kind of what I'm going back at this year since we're starting over, is that if they're going to nominate themselves if they want. And then also they'll fill out a paper if they feel like someone should be on it that doesn't feel like they should nominate themselves. And then we'll vote on it and see who the people are. But they're always, it's always been my most vocal, my most hardest player. And I take that very seriously because I rely on them a lot. to make sure that I get the culture and the climate of my own program. And on the JV and freshman, you know, we have captains. Those change game days. And I got that because I remember when I was in high school, there were some years that they would change the captain every game by based on who won. And I just didn't really see that.
That's funny. Do you give your captains any specific responsibilities?
I do, and it depends on how we're doing on that season. Like if we're having a kind of downward spiral, I rely heavily on them. Even if we're on an upward spiral, I remember when we were in Vegas, we played two games. We won our first. The second game we played, we didn't play very well, and so then we met in the hotel room and we hashed out. And we already had our captains at that point in time, and I relied a lot on them to have them not only tell the team what they're supposed to do, but at the same point in time, as a coaching, we're all together as a coaching staff and the team and the camp captains, we all worked to come together. And it actually worked out well because the next game we beat a team from Florida with a 7-footer. So that was fun.
Yeah.
So I mean, I use them a lot. Plus yeah. I can use them to figure out what the climate is. Why is Johnny having, is not on his A game today. What's up?
Right. Do you have a favorite team bonding activity that you do to help kind of build that chemistry and kind of family feel?
If your stomach's full, you're happy. I remember this, we've been doing this for years. And so we have, the team meals, we'll sit down and do that. And I invite all the kids at my house and some of the funnest, on my Instagram, watching kids having a dunk contest on an 8-foot hoop, and then all of a sudden my little 11-year-old dunking on them. But anytime I can get the team around so that's outside of basketball, but they're still having a good time and they're messing around and they're, all sorts of other things are going on. So they see you as a human and not just as their coach. I take a lot of, I really enjoy those experiences. And then when we go travel, like that was a big thing here is no one ever went. So we went to Wyoming, we went to, just Arizona, Spokane. But whenever I go on those trips, I can take a picture of the team at some large place. Like I have a picture of one team in front of the Hoover Dam, New Orleans, whether it's the Las Vegas entrance, whether it's, we were in Wyoming. I took a couple pictures of one of Sturgis, and so I always go back and look at those things and the National Monument. I mean, just fun stuff.
Yeah, totally. And those are the moments they remember, right? I mean, that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, so if I remember, I still refer back to that. It always makes me smile.
Yeah. Are you guys able to travel this year with COVID restrictions within your district, or?
We're finding that out. We're finding that out in the next 2 weeks. So
okay.
I'm hoping so.
Right.
We've been waiting for 2 years, and the kids are excited, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. What's your favorite drill that you do, whether it's daily or weekly or whenever you get it? I know you said you have a drill library. So do you have a favorite or maybe a favorite few?
Yeah, I have different ones. I know I love our transition drill. The different ones that we do. I mean, we'll do, like, I call it 110. It's like the Duke, four-ball shooting stuff, and then we'll just do different things to get in competitive. I still love continuous 3-on-2 and putting stipulations on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm always trying to find new things. A lot of stuff where you getting shot. I just love to have kids get shots up and they enjoy it. But the shell drill I've really got into a lot more now. I'm talking. So just, we do a thing called an X drill, which is a kind of like a competitive little drill. So there's some good stuff we do, and I enjoy it. And they know if it's a day, if it's a defensive day, you're either going to see this drill for sure, like a charge drill, and I'll get all excited for it. And so,
mm-hmm. Do you mind kind of describing your X drill?
It's just have four corners. So you have four corners. So the kids work on, apparently I learned yesterday, they don't work on high school passes. They work on actual college passes apparently. So you're on one corner, you know, one corner guy's at half court in the corner, kick it up to them, they kick it across the floor, they kick it down, and as they kick it all the way across, the first person gets to close out to the far side up guy, and then once the guy on the same side as him passes across, he closes out to the opposite corner, and they play 2-on-2.
Okay.
Anything. I'm big into – I love drills like that where they're learning a lesson about getting the help or getting the gap or communicating at the same point in time they're competing.
Right. So then it offers – it's a 2-on-2 game then, right?
Yes.
Until the offense scores or maybe the defense gets a rebound or gets a stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that's just – it's structured, it's organized, they're still getting shots up, they're still working on defense.
Yeah. You talked a little bit about earlier the having, you know, your freshman team or JV2 team come in and do specific drills like that. Do you ever have them compete against your varsity kids? Or is it typically competing against each other but maybe in front of the other teams?
And that depends. Like, we're not playing games against them. But
right.
We'll do that. Like we'll have a shooting competition where we'll bring everyone in, whether it's five spot, five ball, where you have one gut captain and another captain. They're choosing throughout their team, so they start to know the kids' names. And we'll do this early on in the year, and we'll put them in spots, and the winner doesn't have to do a set of lines or some sort of other. Or maybe I'll bring candy that or like a candy bar that day, so the kids, mm-hmm. so the younger kids start to see. And know the older kids in the program.
Right.
So, and we'll do the transition drill with the freshmen with us every once in a while. That gets kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if you have a freshman that's getting a little full of themselves, right, Coach? Throw them in there, let the varsity guys humble them a little bit.
Yeah. And we, you know, and with my coaching staff, sometimes we'll switch roles. Where a coach will coach the freshman, and the freshman coach will come over and coach the JV just to build that family-ish atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great coaching development too there, right? I mean, you get a lot of benefits to that as well. Well, great, Coach. I think that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for spending the time to chat with us. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you for having me on.
If you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of Coach Law, you can find his contact information in the episode description. We hope you'll join us next time here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Until then, coach them up.
Thank you for listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Is there a coach you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss? You can write us a message on the Anchor website or send us an email at OregonBasketballCoaches@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.